you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ross Sutton, the SDR show this week. Great comedian Maz Jobrani comes on the show. James Mattern steps in and does the show with me. We do it every single Wednesday and Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time at gasdigitalnetwork.com/live. You can watch live and for free. And then that episode is available immediately on Gas Digital, or you can wait 5 days later with commercials anywhere you consume a podcast, including youtube.com/the SDR show. Here it is right now, the Maz Jobrani episode of the SDR show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the hoe. It's beat, I beat. It's hookers and blow. It's art, it's art. You need to know. The SDR show. Let's go.
It is the SDR show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me, with a brand new gorgeous camera. He looks great.
Look at this.
James Mattern, you look fucking great, dude.
Look at me. I'm a sexy boy with this goddamn camera. Come on.
I mean, it's a different universe. You look great.
God, look at you giving me compliments, huh? I feel like the cheerleader in high school.
It's impressive. It's impressive. Shannon is at the Gas Digital Studios producing over there. We just played a silly game that will come out on the Gas Digital Instagram. The important thing is Shannon and I won. That's really all that matters. Is. We played against Lewis and Natalie, and we won. That's all that matters. So now this guy, he is an Iranian-American, which is interesting. We'll get into that. 6 stand-up specials starting back in 2007 with Axis of Evil. His newest one, Pandemic Warrior, is out on Peacock TV. And the host of the Back to School podcast, which I love the concept. We'll get into that as well. Maz Like Mazda, and then Joe Brani. Maz Jobrani, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for getting the name right. I appreciate that.
Well, I watched the thing that you described it as Maz Like Mazda, and then the name Joe, a bra like to hold up boobies, and then someone's knee. Easy enough.
So easy, and yet so many times I have people mispronouncing it. I had, like you said, I have my podcast, and I had a guest on my podcast, and he insisted on always answering the question by saying my name first. But rather than saying, Maz, let me tell you, man, he would keep saying, Maz, let me tell you, Maz, let me tell. By like the fifth time, I'm like, should I correct him? It's my show. It's called Back to School with Maz Jobrani. I was like, what do I got to do for this guy? And then I'll go through it. I'll be like Mazda, Maserati, La Maz, Mazatlan. They go, I got it. And they go, so listen, Maz. I'm like, oh, God.
You know, it's funny. It just happened on this show recently. My usual co-host is Big J. Okerson, the comic Big J. Okerson. And then James fills in from time to time as well. And then we had, God, was it Taffer? It was John Taffer, right, Janet? So John Taffer was on. And John did some research, obviously, and assumed that James was Jay and kept referring to him as Jay. And I tried to correct it a couple of times. I said, James, you have any questions for him? And he would ask, and he stuck with Jay. Do you remember that, James?
Yeah, but I think he was just being one of them lazy dudes. But it's like my first letter is J, and the thing under my Zoom says Jamie, and I think he didn't want to call a grown man Jamie, which I respect him for, so I think he just called me Jay. I didn't think he was doing that shit.
I think
big, but it's Big J Okerson, and no offense, but you're not big. So I'm sure in his head he was like, why do they call him Big? I wonder if that's kind of like a, you know.
I don't know. James, pull out your hog. Let's see what's going on there. Maybe that's where you got it from.
Yo, average size James Mattern is very happy with all of this.
And I'm sure you get jabroni a lot because that's such a term, right? That's got to happen a lot.
So the jabroni thing, so what happened was, so the Iron Sheik would call wrestlers jabroni, and then The Rock took it to another level, jabroni. And here's what's funny is, like you said, I was born in Iran, grew up in America, and my dad back in Iran, he had a lot of friends that were actually Iranian wrestlers. And I'm talking about like Greco-Roman wrestling, like Olympic wrestling, not like WWE. And so the Iron Sheik used to be a wrestler back in Iran. And when I heard them using the term jabroni as a derogatory term, I thought to myself, I was like, wait a minute, maybe my dad crossed paths with the Iron Sheik somewhere in Iran and he pissed them off. So the Iron Sheik came to America and was like, I'm going to turn your name into a derogatory term. So that's what I thought. And then I ended up doing the research and it turns out the explanation I saw was jabroni comes from day jobber. It's those guys that you see that get thrown around in the ring who are wearing like the spandex with no name. Day jobbers. So they're saying, you're nothing but a day jobber. You're a jabroni. Like, you know, I'm going to throw you around. Oh. So that's where it comes from.
That's so funny. I did not. Well, I just learned something. James, you're a big wrestling fan. Did you know that already?
I didn't put that together, but it makes sense because when you lose all the time, you're called a jobber. Because if me and now I'm scared to say your name.
Mazda. Think about a car. Think about a car.
Well, it's been a long time. I think about the Q train. But if we were going to wrestle and you want him to win, I would be doing the job. So anyone who loses and never wins is a jobber. So that makes total sense. So right now, I see, says a blind man.
Oh, fair enough. And by the way, so we have a couple of little similarities, Maz, that I want to share with you. Right. So number one, you were born in Iran and then you came here, right?
Yeah.
My family's from Syria. My father was born in Syria and came here. And the interesting thing was, and I think you had, I was listening to some stuff. So my father, who spoke Arabic, would not speak Arabic in front of me to my grandparents as a kid because they didn't want us to have an accent. They didn't want us to go through the hardship that he went to. So I never learned any Arabic at all. They want us to not have an accent, and I didn't. And I do love a lot of the Middle Eastern food very much, but they were trying to shield us from the Middle Eastern background.
You know, it's interesting because when immigrants come to America, they take two approaches. One is the hardcore, you need to be proud of what you are and who you are, and I don't care. You're like, but Dad, they're bullying me at school. Then bully them back. There's 50 of them. Dad, there's one of me. You got to fight. You think I didn't fight? You know, there's that mentality, you know, where they speak to you in your language and they make you like, you know, go to school with stinky food. And then there's the other one, like you just said, you know, I've heard a lot of Latinos will be like, yeah, man, my parents wouldn't speak Spanish in front of me. They wanted me to like blend in and blah, blah, blah. And so I'm of the mind of like, I want my kids to know more languages. Unfortunately, what happened with my wife is born in India, grew up in America. So she is Americanized, but also she and I don't speak, you know, I speak Persian. She doesn't speak the language from the South, which is Malayalam. So unfortunately, we just spoke English at the house. So my kids, there's so many times when I'm like, you know, I try to teach them a couple words in Persian and they just, like I'll tell you something. The American accent is the worst accent in the world. Like, and you guys know, like, you know, when an American like speaks Spanish, they're like, hola, que me gusta, all that shit. So when I try my kids and they speak like something and they say something in Persian and they have that American accent, I'm like, oh, shit, I messed up. It's like I didn't teach them right. And what? And I wish you would have learned Arabic. I wish. It's great to know more languages, you know.
And also the sooner you do it, the better chance you're actually going to embrace other languages. Would you say your kids identify? Obviously, they identify as American. But if they had to pick, do they feel more Persian or more Indian in their cultural recognition, which one do you think they would pick?
I think they're going to go a little more Persian simply because I think I lobbied them harder than my wife did. Right, like, I really like Persian food. By the way, if you've never had Persian food, I mean, Indian food is delicious, but Persian food is like Indian food, but not as hot, spicy, like just delicious. So whenever I get Persian food, they love that.
Does Persian food differ from just regular Arabic food that I'm thinking of, like Middle Eastern food? Is it different than that?
It's in that realm. So we have rice as our base. We all have kebabs. But then from there, it's the broths that go on top of the food. I'll tell you this. Like Anthony Bourdain did a episode of Parts Unknown in Iran. And he goes, I never knew that the Iranians would be the most hospitable people in the world. And that's part of the Arabic culture as well. It's like the hospitality is beyond like, I mean, it's like you're a guest in my house, then this is your house, you know. But the food itself, if you live in any town and you can find a Persian restaurant, I highly recommend you go and try the rice with the different broths that go on top of it. It's just, I mean, I'm obviously a little, you know,
biased
here, but it's It really is.
Let me ask you, is there one in New York City that you would recommend? Because I live in Manhattan. If there's one in Manhattan, I would go try it because I love trying new food.
There used to be one in Manhattan called Ravagh, Ravagh.
But I know that one. That place, actually, but I thought they were Lebanese. They were... Oh, what do I know? What do I thought they were?
That happens a lot. Listen, by the way, and the fact that you're Syrian and you don't know that, like, you thought that's what it was. Yeah. You don't know how many times I'll be like, yeah, you know, I'm Persian. And someone's like, oh, I've been to Saudi Arabia. And I'm like, different country. Different country.
So then the other part that it's funny, because I watched you talk about this and I have gone through this to the point where it's affected my psyche. I had get lost at this point and I think almost 70 pounds, right? I got very fat after my father passed away. And then I decided not only am I going to lose weight, but I'm going to share it on social media. Maybe it helps people. Maybe some people are inspired by it. Maybe not, whatever. And all I get is shit from comics and other people saying, you know, hard shit about me. How dare you? This, that, you still look whatever. And I saw you say basically the same fucking thing happened to you.
So, dude, what happened was, you know how it is. Social media, part of it is for our jobs. It's like to be there, be present. In all honesty, like if it weren't for my touring and fan base, I probably would not be on social media that much at all. Because my day, I just get distracted easily. So from like walking the dog, to working on a script, to picking up the kids, to trying to exercise, I just have a lot going on. Mm-hmm. So my number one thing is I don't wake up going like, oh, I need to do a post, blah, blah, blah. So I came up with this idea because, by the way, part of it was I saw Kevin Hart doing it where he's like, every town he would go in to perform, he's like, I'm running 5 miles. Who wants to come with me? And then they would have these, you know, he'd have these like pictures and videos of him running 5 miles with like 1,000 people behind him. I'm like, oh, that's how he sells out his show. He runs with them. Then they go to the show. So I was like, all right, you know what I'll do?
It'd be cool. At the end of every run, it's right into the entrance of the comedy club. Like,
it's like a gladiator just right into the Coliseum. No, so I thought, I was like, hey, why not? Let me post this on my social media. Maybe I'll create something. By the way, also Kevin started getting like sponsorship from Nike. By the way, Kevin has 130 million followers on Instagram. You know, so I was like, maybe I'll get some shoes from Nike and I'll get a couple of fans to come in, like comedy running fans. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, because part of also your comedy is you go, you know, the fact that I'm Iranian American. Sometimes people go like, oh, it's Persian humor. Well, it's not. It's like, you know, stand up about my family and about the pandemic and my life and just whatever, all this other stuff. Anyway, I was like, maybe I could tap into like the runners and, you know, start building. So I started January of 2020. I never do a New Year's resolution, but I happened to be New Year's Eve. We were coming back from Lake Tahoe. So we're at the Reno airport and they had this wall with all these post-its that people put up for New Year's resolutions. This is 2020, going into 2020. And I was like, you know what, guys? You know, I've been eating a lot of pastries and chocolates and drinking a lot of wine, and I've kind of let myself go, and I'm probably 10 pounds heavier than I should be. I go, by March 1st, Daddy's going to lose 10 pounds, kids. Here we go. Come home, January 1st, 2020, start running, start eating salads, feeling good. By the way, dudes, we lose weight fast. All of a sudden, 2 pounds, 3 pounds. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to post this on my socials and make it a thing. And exactly what you just said, I go and I stand on the scale and I take a picture of the weight loss going down. And then I'm like, let me see how I'm inspiring my fans. And literally, first comment, dude, your toes are ugly.
It's like, what? Unbelievable.
What the hell? Second comment, someone's like, why are your shins purple? And I was like, what the hell? And I'm looking at my shins. I'm like, maybe I got some kind of disease.
Fucking fucked up toes and jacked up fucking shins.
From then on, the pictures were like I was wearing socks. And even when you wear socks, they're like, dude, your room, you know, that room's a horrible room for picture taking. I'm like, are you guys? I'm trying to get you to run. Why are you giving me directorial, you know, lighting advice? Just shut the fuck up.
I mean, the amount of shit that Big J gives me. Tim Dillon just did a fucking 5-minute piece on hoping I get hit by a car. God damn it! All I'm trying to do is be healthy.
Jesus, what is wrong with this? You know what it is? It's deflecting because they don't want to get healthy and they're jealous of the fact that you're getting healthy. So they deflect those bastards. Get on a treadmill, Tim.
Yeah, Tim and Jay, what the fuck is wrong with you? So anyway, let's go. So what I really like is the idea of your podcast. So, you know, this it's called Back to School with Moz. And the idea being you have kids, They ask you a bunch of fucking questions. You don't know the answers. So get to the root of these answers by bringing on people. Do you remember the first time the question that inspired you to say, well, I don't, let's go fucking find an expert on this?
Yeah, so anyone who's got kids knows. Now my kids are a little older now. They're 10 and 13. This started like 2 years ago, so, you know, they were younger. But even before that, the one question that really got me going, it was actually kind of funny. We had gone to Palm Springs in June or something, and it was like 115 degrees. Ugh. And this is when my kids were younger, like, you know, 5, 6, 7, whatever that age was. And one day, you know, we live near a coffee shop, so we get on our bikes, we bike over to the coffee shop, and then I'm
at 5 and 7, they're biking? That's fine. What do I know? That's fine at 5 years old? The fuck do I know?
But yeah. Bro, I got Olympic athletes living at the house.
What do I know? Things like 5 years old, you don't go on a bike. What do I know?
We're immigrant parents, so I sent them out on their own.
Trial by fire. Yeah.
By the way, I don't know about you, but when I was 5, 6, 7, I used to bike like 3 miles on my own to go get McDonald's. So I
can't believe
it,
by the way. The fact that my father used to let us do this, there was three of us, three kids, me and my brother and my cousin. We all were together. We had my parents, my father and my uncle had a place together. They only gave us two bikes. So we would put two bikes. I would ride one. My cousin would ride the other. And then we had tied a rope to one bike and my brother would skateboard behind the bike at like 7 years old through traffic. Now you'd be arrested for sure.
With no helmet, by the way.
No helmet.
Yeah, there was none of that shit.
He used to Marty McFly that shit?
Yeah, I would ride and my brother would be skateboarding behind me with a shitty flimsy rope that we found like on the side of the road.
Bro, that was a different world. I'm telling you, they did not care. There was no parenting books back then. There was like one parent who was a hippie who used to like smoke weed and like read a parenting book. No other parents read parenting books. They let you go out there with your bikes and ropes and no helmet. My parents let me bike without a helmet. We just come to America. We were in a foreign land. They didn't even know where we were. They were like, go, figure it out. And I would go to McDonald's, which by the way, now McDonald's, like with our kids, like they've learned McDonald's is poison. So I swear to God, I think they were on a trip or something. And one of the parents was like, let's go get McDonald's. And my kids were like, no, we can't have McDonald's.
Oh, wow.
And then the parents were like, what'd you do to your kids? I'm like, well, we told them McDonald's is bad for you.
So, when you could go as a kid, you could go buy cigarettes for your father. Nobody questioned shit.
Nobody cared.
There was candy cigarettes. They wanted you to eat goddamn cigarettes.
It's so weird. And I think about the amount of time I'd be left alone. Just like my brother and I would be like in a park somewhere, like at 6 or 7, 4 hours. No one gave a shit. But anyway, So
no
your kids
phone,
and your,
no nothing. They would just say, go out, come back. I heard Spike Lee talk about that. He goes, back in the day in Brooklyn, he's like, they would just go outside, play until nighttime and come home. Anyway, take my kids. We go to Palm Springs. We go to the coffee shop. We get there. And I thought, I'm like, oh, I'll teach my kids a little geography lesson and a little lesson about temperature, et cetera. I go, guys, did you know that day in Palm Springs, that was about 115 degrees? I go, I bet you there was another part of the world that was just as hot. And I go, maybe Saudi Arabia. So we looked it up and it turned out, no, Palm Springs was actually hotter than Saudi Arabia. And then I go, by the way, guys, did you know that when it's summer over here, it's winter in other parts of the world? I said, for example, where your mother's from, India, it's winter because it's in the southern hemisphere. Well, I looked and I come to realize, no, India's not in the southern hemisphere. It's in the northern hemisphere, you idiot. So now I'm like, oh, you know what? I better stop giving them misinformation and let me just start Googling. Next thing you know, I'm Googling southern hemisphere. I'm discovering shit as I go and I'm pretending like I knew it. Like, I'm like, oh, did you know Ecuador is called Ecuador because it's on the equator? Did you know this? I had no idea. But I'm like sitting there Googling.
What good bullshit.
Bullshit. So I realized, I'm like, oh my God, I don't know anything. And I was like, this is horrible. So then I, down the line, when I was trying to get a podcast together, I go, that's a good way to do it, right? Bring on actual experts in whatever it is and have the kids ask the first question. So that's how it started. And the truth is, like, as they're getting older, it's kind of become like a chore almost. Like my poor son, he'll have homework and he'll be like running late. I'll be like, buddy, you got to come down here, ask a question of my next guest. He's like, Dad, I don't know anything about, you know, China's socioeconomic. What do I care? I'm like, just ask a question. I need your first question.
My first question is, why is my father making me do this still?
Yeah, exactly. That's really it.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
It's funny, I listened to a clip where you talked about, which is, by the way, not to get political. I know you're very political in your comedy. I'm not a political. I don't try to get political at all. But you talked, there's a new clip recently about how Middle Easterns pay parking tickets. And for a while, the Nordic countries would always park correctly. The Middle Easterns would. And then when they made it, I'm surmising it here. But basically, when you think you could get away with it, you start parking illegally. When you don't get away with it because you know you're going to get ticketed, you start paying. And I say that's the basic reason why libertarianism doesn't work, is because in general, people will do shit if they think they can get away with it.
Yeah. So, you know, my guests have ranged anywhere from like a guy who helped land the rover on Mars to a lady who dives underneath glaciers. But I have a lot of guests that talk about politics and stuff. And this week's guest was a guy named Brian Kloss, who is a professor of politics out of England, and he's written a book called Corruptible, and it's all about why people in power become corrupt. Is it because power attracts corruptible people, or do they become corrupt because they can become corrupt?
Right.
So he's got all these great stories, and the story you're talking about was, he was talking about the United Nations, obviously in New York, and he was saying, I think over the period of like 4 or 5 years, diplomats from different parts of the world who were living in New York, they accrued $18 million worth of parking tickets.
It's fucking crazy.
Yeah, you know how there's like the diplomatic immunity,
yeah,
right?
Of
so
course.
These guys would just park wherever they wanted. They didn't care. They just throw it away. So after 5 years, the mayor at that time, I think it was Bloomberg or whoever it was like, no, you got to start paying it. And when they started implementing the payment, suddenly all these countries started, you know, it went down. But what he was saying was, he said, before the diplomats who came from countries like Egypt or Yemen or other places where corruption was big, they were doing more of the violations. But after several years, countries like Norway and other places that are more law-abiding, because they saw that in New York they could get away with it, they also started getting away with it. So it's just interesting how power can corrupt. And it's like, you know, the whole idea of, I mean, another one that he had was really interesting was, he was saying it's better to be the beta than the alpha. Like, always be, don't be the top dog, be the second dog, because the top dog, everyone's gunning for them. And it's this whole thing of like, if you look at presidents and how much they age over that course, and then the second person in charge, you know, gets the benefits, the fruits of being in power. But they don't have to deal with people gunning for them. So it was all, it's a very interesting, the guy's really smart.
Well, there's that famous experiment where they brought, and I'm fucking up the name, but I don't remember the name of it, but they gave people, they took like 20 people, made half of them prisoners and half of them wardens and like, you know, prison guards. None of them really had that power. They just did it. And within like 2-3 like days, they became fucking horrible people to the prisoners because they could get away with it. You know what, Shannon? What?
Stanford.
Yeah, so Shannon, so he talks about this in his book, and it's interesting because he goes, the flaw with that experiment was when they reached out for the experiment subjects who were going to be the prison guards and the prisoners.
They looked for psychopaths only.
No, exactly. They actually said like, you know, psychological prison, the word like prisoner
Oh, that's a problem.
So people that are attracted to power, a lot of them went in and they signed up. So years later, another school did a second study where they did, you know, people wanted for a prison guard study, and the other ones just said people wanted for a psychology study. And the psychology study got people that were a little more empathetic, mm-hmm. and not like that kind of goes with, like, you can talk about cops, for example. A lot of times probably people who get attracted to being cops are people who want that power,
right?
And so this guy, I'm telling you, this stuff is so interesting to me. That's why I love, like, when you get these guests who know their shit and they've gone and they've studied.
Yeah.
And I mean, this guy, Brian Klaus, was amazing. And so, I highly recommend you guys.
One of my favorite episodes of this show is when we had Neil deGrasse Tyson on, and I just got to ask every fucking space question I've ever wanted in my life in an hour and change.
Isn't that crazy? It's interesting because I've come to realize, like, there are some people who are really good with remembering details. I'm the kind of guy who'll be reading a book and you go, and I'm like, this is a great book. And you go, who's the author? I'm like, I have no idea. I don't even look at the backside to see who I'm reading. I'm just reading it. But there are people, and I'll tell you, this was kind of a little, you know, sometimes you're reminded of how like little details, you know. Mm-hmm. I did a podcast where they said, give us two or three things that you're an expert in, and then we'll bring an expert and we'll have you guys challenge each other in terms of your knowledge of that
subject. I would not qualify myself as an expert on fucking anything.
But that's my point. So exactly. So it was me, and the other guest was Cristela Alonso. Now, Cristela is somebody who not only is funny, but she has an amazing, I've just through the years come to see, she's got a really good memory on a lot of stuff. So mm-hmm. Cristela picked the Golden Girls. She's like, I know the Golden Girls inside and out. Mm-hmm. And these guys brought a lady who'd written a book on the Golden Girls. And she and Cristela are going at, Cristela knew more than this lady. She's like, episode 9, blah, blah, blah. She's killing it. I'm sitting there. They go, give us three subjects you're an expert on. I'm like, oh my God. I exactly what you just said. I go, I don't think I'm an expert on anything. And then I go, I got to be an expert on stand-up comedy. I'm a stand-up comedian. And I go, no, I don't know.
No,
like,
way.
You told me what's Richard Pryor's third album. I have no idea. I don't know. So ultimately, I was like, accents. I'm pretty good with accents. So that's what we did. And that's just
did they bring subjective. In an accent? Another, because I think of what's his name always from SNL, from Portlandia. What the fuck is his name?
God, oh, Fred Armisen.
Fred Armisen does incredible accents. That he amazes me. He does regional in like subset regions of accents.
So what I did again, Ralph, to just be mediocre, I've come to the point where I say I do mediocre accents. That way,
you're an expert on mediocre accents.
Yeah, that way if somebody who's like Swedish is like, no, that's not Swedish, that's German. I'm like, well, I tried my best. What do you want from me? You know, like, that's it.
Shannon, would you say Friends would be yours if you pick? Because I know you're obsessed with Friends. Would that what you pick?
That's actually what I was thinking just now when I was like, what could I say I'm an expert on? It would probably be Friends, but I can't do it. I wouldn't be able to tell you what episode something happened, but I could tell you everything that happened and when and everything about it.
Right. I don't know what I would pick. James, what would you pick as an expert? Wrestling, maybe?
Music, like rock music. But I'm gonna do this one. Third Richard Pryor album, my friend. Is it something I said? Come on, baby.
That's what I'm talking about.
Stand up comedy. Put that to my list. Let's fucking go. God damn it.
Yeah, I would say nothing. My answer, I would say I'm pretty good with 80s rock. Like, I think I could throw down.
You crush at 80s rock.
But I think that's what I would say. I know you and I, Maz, are about the same age. You're like 49. I'm 51. So in New York, I grew up loving 80s rock. I think I would throw down 80s rock knowledge, but hairband 80s rock.
I wonder if it's like genetics, or I wonder if it's like as a kid. Some people, like, I actually met a lady who said that she was adopted from Korea, and she said something happened in that, like, learning one language, then forgetting that language and go to the next language, where she goes, I'm not good at remembering specific stuff. And I would love to hear a study on, like, what is it that makes some people be so good at being like, pop, 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 everything. Like, for example, I play soccer my whole life. I'm pretty good at soccer. But you ask me about any soccer team, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. You know, but there are friends of mine who are just like, Ian Edwards is a big soccer guy, right? He knows his stuff. Jason Galern. It's just, I don't know what it is. Like, I can give you the general, you know, I have a few quotes from The Godfather, you know. You come to me on the day of my daughter's wedding, you know, and then that's all I know. You ask me for a
I would definitely not put you an expert if that's the only line you know. You know, it's funny. My brother has the best two things that I would say. I don't know anyone better. Facial recognition, which my facial recognition software in my body is horrible, and his is incredible. And then him with figuring his like way around, his GPS, internal GPS, is unfucking canny. Where I still get lost in Manhattan once in a while. It's
but
crazy.
See, that's where I'm going to go. So I
and we're college, twins, by the way.
Listen, in college I read a book that it broke down. It was one of these books that broke down and said there's seven types of intelligence. Now, I'm guessing there's a lot more. Mm-hmm. But that's where I sit there and I go, everyone's got to have something that they're pretty good at. So you could be, you know, horrible at reading, but you're an amazing athlete, or you're, like you just said, you're, you know, you don't remember specifics, but you're good with the, you know, the, you know, geography or whatever. So for me, I sit there and I go, hey, I'm pretty good with comedy. So I can sit in a room with comedians and we'll start to like improvise and come up with jokes, because there are some people who just aren't wired that way. So right. I feel like that's something I'm pretty good at. You know, and I think that you got to lean into what you're good at worry about the other stuff.
There's that great theory that, you know, like, so everybody is predisposed to be at least somewhat good at something, right? Better than the average on something. But then you also have your interests. The best scenario is when those two things align. If you're 5'3" and you want to be a phenomenal basketball player, I got news for you. You might be okay, but you're never going to the majors. So when you can align your interest and your ability, that's when you become a superstar.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because
why do you like that so much, James, by the way? Sorry.
Because your lack of sports is just the best when it shines. You're like, you could be 5'3" and you'd be great at basketball, but you won't get to the majors. It's not the NBA. You'll never win the Australian Open playing basketball.
I don't know sports, James. Go fuck yourself.
You know, you might be the best center fielder, but it's just not going to work
out. You might score 7 points in the big basketball game.
Your Syrian dad wanted you to not learn Arabic, and he forgot to teach you about baseball.
Oh yeah, no
football.
Sports. My dad hated sports. I didn't know anything. I don't know shit about sports.
Well, that's like, for me, that was what, like, I blended in a lot with that as a young kid. And I think that, like, my parents had no idea what that was, but I used to collect baseball cards and all that other stuff. And even that, though, I lost interest. I think part of it also might be, I don't know if it's an ADD thing or an ADHD thing. Like, I think what you just said, I lucked in to the best career for me, because when I'm on stage doing stand-up for 15 minutes or an hour, I have to focus on the show, on the audience. I got to be in the moment. I got to pay attention. If I'm shooting something on TV, I got a minute or 2 minute scene. I got to be in it. There's been so many times where I've had to go in for like a parent teacher meeting and we're sitting there and the teacher's talking and my mind is just going elsewhere. And I'm like, I could never do an office job, dude. I'd be the worst.
I guess by that rationale, you'd be a great porn star too. Just focus in on the task at hand in front of you.
30 seconds, bro. In and out. Bada bing, bada boom.
All right, before we go any further, I want to tell you about one of our longtime sponsors. God, do we love them. It is Blue Chew and their chewables. It's a chewable form of both of the same ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. You know, we talk about them all the time. It's a fraction of the cost because they're chewable. It gets into your body faster. It is also achieving harder, stronger erections, combats all forms of erectile dysfunction. It's an online prescription service, so there's no visits to the doctor office, no awkward conversations, no waiting in line at the pharmacy. You just go online at bluechew.com, use the code SDR. First one's free. Then you just pay the $5 shipping. What could be easier than you two can have rock hard ding dongs? Who doesn't want that? Chew it and do it. That's what we say. Bluechew.com. Use the promo code SDR. First one's free. You just pay the $5 shipping. All right, let's get back into it.
I also like that you, which is going looking up your history, when you got your first big movie, your Friday After Next, you were still working in an ad agency.
You did your research. I like that.
I don't fuck around, man. I'm not a comedy guy. I'm not a sports guy. I got to do research.
This is what you're good at, research. Yeah,
what a shitty thing to be good at, by the way. God damn it.
Well, listen, I went and I did. Yeah, I did. First of all, no, we need good research nowadays because there's so much bullshit out there. So we need it. But yeah, I auditioned for Friday After Next, and I forget, was like 2001 or something. And I had a day job going. I was actually a receptionist at an advertising agency, and they call me up. They go, "You got the part," and I go, "Oh my god!" And it was like, it was one of these jobs that was like an independent contractor. Like they would hire me, you know, and just rehire. Mm-hmm. So I had to go to them. I go, listen, I need 2 weeks. I'm going to go shoot a movie. And it was amazing because for 2 weeks, I was a movie star. I had my own trailer. I'd show up. The PA would be like, Mr. Giobrani, would you like your coffee? I was like, yeah, give me a coffee. Blah, blah, blah. You know, here I am. And on that film, it was me. So all the guys had done the previous Friday, but the new guys on it was me, Cat Williams, and Terry Crews. We were the three new guys.
That's so cool.
And we were also like, this is so cool, man. We're hanging out with Ice Cube and John Witherspoon and Mike. This is amazing. You know, and Cat was the funniest person I'd ever met. Terry was the sweetest person I ever met. We're all just like, just so excited to be a part of this. And it's funny because on the film, people would be like, bro, this is going to be big. Your career is going to take off. I was like, oh my God, this is great. So 2 weeks of shooting, get paid pretty much like, I think for 2 weeks, it was like, I don't know, $15,000, $16,000. Mm-hmm. Whereas as a receptionist, I was making like $25,000 for the year. So I was, you know, 2 weeks, good. I made what I,
wow. Yeah.
And then, but then when I'm done, I mean, it doesn't mean like that's the problem with this business. Like when you're done, it's not like you're at a law firm where your checks keep coming in. No, after 2 weeks, they're like, that's it. So then I was like, back to the agency.
How long after that did the actual movie come out? Was it like 6 months later or a year later? Or
No, the movie itself came out like maybe a year or so later. So I lucked out because what happened was, first of all, I have no ego. So I was like, whatever, I'll just keep doing this job until I can, you mm-hmm. know, move on. And I was doing stand-up at night, but I think I got a commercial. Commercials are where it's at because you shoot one day and then you get like 30,000 over the year or 40,000, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Every time they play it, you get another check. You're like, oh, shit. So it's actually interesting because when the movie came out, it was a hit in the like Black and Latino community, but it was not an industry hit at all. Like no one in the industry knew about it, but I would walk down Sunset going from the Comedy Store to Laugh Factory, like late night, there's these guys like almost gangbanger types, like driving through Sunset. And I'm like walking around going like, I hope I don't get shot. As I'm walking down the street, my character's name was Molly in Friday After Next. Dude, I'm walking down the street, people are pulling their windows down. Yo, it's Molly. What's up, Molly? And I'm like, I got street cred. What's up?
That's fucking awesome. I started to watch. I didn't make it through the whole movie yet just because I just started watching. But I really am enjoying, and I'm going to say it, but Jimmy Vestwood. I'm enjoying it. It came out like 6-7 years ago, I think, at this point, right? Is that right about that?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I appreciate that, Ralph.
I love Jimmy the guy's Vestwood. Name. His name is Jamshit.
Yeah, Jamshit Fakhreddin.
Fucker in the pool.
The guy keeps calling it Jamshit. Yeah, shit fucker in the pool. Mm. That was Jimmy Vestwood, American Hero, is a movie that I co-wrote with my buddy Amir Ohebsian. So I was a huge fan of the Peter Sellers Pink Panther when I was a kid.
Right.
So I always wanted to do a slapstick, over-the-top, silly comedy. So we came up with this comedy about this guy who's living in Iran and he wins the green card lottery to come to America and he wants to be a cop or like save the day like Steve McQueen because that's what he's got, these movies back in his head. Right. And so then he ends up somehow becoming a private investigator and ends up in this like plot to, you know, start World War III and he tries to save the day. So yeah. It was just a silly movie.
It's fun. I'm about 40 minutes in so far and I'm definitely going to watch the whole thing. I've enjoyed it. I like that he gave his name is because he thought Clint Eastwood was cool. So he went to Westwood is where the name comes from. And it definitely... kind of like a Don't Mess With the Zohan vibe, but a little more slapsticky and fun.
Yes, exactly. And here's what's interesting. So for the longest time, my stand-up, I started getting political with it. And so there was, I think I attracted a certain type of audience that was like, oh, highbrow, I want to hear his political comedy. And then this movie, so slapstick, when we wrote it for like 12, 13-year-old boys or somebody who's stoned. Like stoners, right. I think, would love it. And so we have like a lot of dick jokes and like just silly, just slapstick. So it was funny because what would happen is I would do the show and some of these people would come to the show to the movie. We did the movie and like people would come to the movie sometimes like in like dressed in suits and like they're, you know, they're going to go to the Metropolitan Opera or something. I swear to God, I would show up at screenings to do a Q&A and I would see the look of disappointment as these people like this was.
It has also like a broken lizard vibe, you know, like. That kind of yeah. Super Troopers fun, silly. I really, so far, really much, very much enjoying the vibe of it for sure.
Appreciate it.
So you called, not in the most recent special, Pandemic War, the one before, Immigrant, came out in around 2017, which is when it was a hot button issue, Syrian immigrants, stuff like that. We had a crazy experience on the show that I feel is very synonymous with what happened, which is we had a porn star on, right? Uh-huh. Nikki Benz is her name. And she is from, I think it was fucking Lithuania. I could be wrong, but somewhere like that. And this was during the height of the Syrian refugee crisis. And I said, I think it's cool when an immigrant comes to this country and really makes a name for herself, right? Because she, uh-huh. And she goes, fuck you, I'm not an immigrant. Because she was confusing illegal immigrant with immigrant because she just didn't know. And she got angry on the show. I tried to make it easy. First of all, it shows you how what a hot button issue it became. I tried to soften it by saying, hey, look, we're all once removed from or twice removed from being immigrants in this room. And I was like, you know, at the time, our producer was a black guy. His parents were from Africa. We had my producer, another was from, her parents were from Russia. And I said, hey, look, I'm the worst. Because at the time it was, you know, Syria. I said, my family's from Syria. And she goes, oh, what are you, a fucking terrorist? Your family's fucking terrorist. It was batshit crazy. Oh, Nikki Benz is Ukrainian. I said Lithuanian. Thank you, Jim. So she started to threaten to fucking, she tried to get people to take the episode down. I clipped that out and I put the hashtag immigrants welcome here. And it just showed you at the time it was such a fucking hot button issue that when I saw your special was named Immigrant, I'm like, oh, I get it. You know,
well, let me just start by saying, after hearing that, I will never masturbate to Nikki Benz again. Do you understand? I am now boycotting Nikki Benz masturbation.
Fair enough.
Well, listen, you can't go to a porn star to get your immigration news.
right.
I mean, that's your fault, Ralph.
I was trying to be nice, man.
What are you going to be talking about the socio-political economic situation of the Build Back Better bill with
look, I just make it an ad. Look, you try and make it nice and you say to a porn star, congratulations on becoming a porn star. I thought it was a nice thing.
You should only do your podcast with porn stars going forward. You should have Lexington Steel discuss politics.
Shannon, were you on the show at that time or no? You weren't on the show yet. I don't think you were.
No, it was right before me. Because that's when
they walked out. They walked out of the show.
She got hot with you calling her immigrant. Can you imagine if she was here right now and you called her Lithuanian and not Ukrainian? Holy shit.
You know what's depressing about that is you and I assume that people have some minimal knowledge of anything that's political. Because end of the day, politics affects all of us. Whether it's like now we're dealing with Roe versus Wade or the infrastructure bill or the January 6th, whatever it is. We all think people know a little bit. But you open that door up and you realize how no one's paying attention. Because what you just said is very interesting. It's not like saying, oh, I want illegal immigrants to come to America and kill people. You were like, no, we're all immigrants, which really we are, you know?
Yeah.
And so I named my special Immigrant back then because, you know, it's always interesting to me when politicians demonize a group, because you really can, and I know you don't get political, but here's an article I read on the difference between a conservative mind and a liberal mind.
So I heard
Republican
that.
Mind, Democrat mind. So the Republican mind will go towards, it's conservative, so they'll go towards fear. The Democrat mind is liberal, they'll go towards hope. So the Democrat mind might say, let all the immigrants in, we'll figure it out, blah, blah, blah. Now, is that right, wrong? I don't know, you be the judge. The conservative mind, the Republican mind will say, don't let the immigrants in, they'll kill us, they're gonna eat our babies. Like that's how far it goes. So they were demonizing immigrants back then, like under the whole, you know, Trump famously said, I want to ban all Muslims from coming to America. Which,
let me just say,
all,
in Trump's defense, babies are delicious. Continue.
They are delicious. True. But first of all, just the stupidity of a quote unquote Muslim ban. I actually did like a little video making fun of this Muslim ban because it was so stupid. Because, okay, so you're saying there's a Muslim ban. Let's go to Syria, for example. There's Christians in Syria. Now, what's to say? So if you're saying if a Syrian comes to our border, you're going to be like, so are you Muslim or Christian? And all the guy has to say is like, I'm Christian. And you're going to go, come on in. You know what I'm saying? So the problem isn't immigrants. The problem is criminals. The problem is whatever, whether it's terrorists or drug dealers or in our own country, you know, white supremacists, we have a lot of problems. I always say the biggest threat to Americans are Americans, let's face it. So anyway, at that time, immigrants were being so demonized that I decided, I was like, you know what, I'm an immigrant. And the whole Syrian thing is interesting because I'm pretty sympathetic and I'm actually empathetic to other people's struggles. So I just know, like, when I came from Iran to America, it was late 78, there was a revolution about to happen in Iran. And if you remained in Iran and you came from a certain part of society, my father was a successful businessman in Iran. If we had remained in Iran, my father's life would have been threatened. Like, they might have executed him. And I don't know what would have happened to me. Similarly, Syrians leaving a civil war are fleeing a bad situation. The same way that, like, Hondurans that are walking, you know, thousands of miles.
They don't want to do it. They're not doing it for, they have no choice. It's like, whatever. I get it. But the weird thing, though, and I'm sorry to kind of 180 this, but both of you, James is not very political in his comedy, right? I mean, but you are. So do you find, you know, you're going to probably alienate half the audience these days by taking a stance, even something as logical as what you're saying? Do you find that to be something that, something like, well, maybe I shouldn't say these things because I know half the country is not going to be on board with these things?
I honestly, I couldn't live with myself if I wasn't expressing what I want to express. There's this great Public Enemy song, He Got Game.
I know,
and it basically says something along, I always misquote it, but it's like, basically like, fuck the game if it ain't saying nothing. Or like, you got game, but you're not saying anything. What's the point? So my favorite artists, my favorite comedians were Richard Pryor and George Carlin. And, I watch the Colbert monologue every night because I love the politics underneath. I love that Jimmy Kimmel got more political. I think if you can be funny and have a message underneath it, hallelujah. And I ran into this a lot with the Trump stuff because for me, and again, I know it divides people and all this other stuff, but to me, he was a charlatan. He was narcissist. It was just, listen, I have friends that are Republican and I could sit down and go, okay, these are your values. These are my values. But when you show me a guy who clearly to me is manipulating things and is just a bad human being, it just, I get to the point, I'm like, I can't help myself. I got to talk about him to the point where there were times on stage where people would yell at me. They would listen to the whole show, and I would get to the Trump stuff towards the end of the show. Laugh, 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 laugh. At the end, actually, if you go on YouTube and you put Maz Jobrani Trump heckler, I was at Flappers, and this lady must have been drunk, and she's like, I, as a woman, I'm offended by what you're saying. And basically what you're just saying, she's like, I'm an immigrant. And she starts going into that, wow. And it was funny because I learned – let me tell you what happened. Early on during the Trump administration, I decided I'm going to lean into this. I'll go on stage and I'm going to do a lot of jokes about him, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
One time I'm at the Hollywood Improv. I'm doing my jokes. Some dude in the audience yells something back. I yell back. Next thing you know, we're arguing. Next thing you know, the audience in the front row, they were like looking at me in shock. They go, what happened to the comedy show? And I was like, oh my God, I just like derailed the whole show to get in a yelling match with some numbnut over here. So then I decide, I go, you know what I'm going to do? Next time one of these guys yells at me, I'm just going to Tai Chi the situation. I'm going to let them yell and just move on. And this happens in this clip. You'll see.
Wait, Shannon has the clip. She has a bit of it. You want to pull it up, Shannon, towards the middle, I guess? Go through that to you. In the clip where she...
Yeah, I just let her talk. Go ahead, play it.
You guys, relax. You know, everybody, relax. Listen, just calm down. It's almost done. I only have like two more Trump jokes and then we'll be done. I swear to God. I swear to God, I'm being honest. I swear. No, listen. I swear to God. Listen, I swear. You don't have to. It's up to you. You don't have to stay. You don't have to stay. Okay. We went over that already. So they have a couch. I'm going to talk. Go ahead. You talk. I am a legal person sitting on the couch. I'm fine. Okay, namaste, relax.
You need to immigrate legally.
I've immigrated legally. What are you talking about? Okay, listen, they're gonna kick you out now. Look, the guy's gonna kick you out. He's gonna ask you to leave. I'm trying to let you stay. I'm trying to let you stay here legally. He's trying to kick you out. This is like a... I don't know. I swear to God, I'm trying to make you stay. This is like the immigration. INS just showed up. Consider me your immigration lawyer. Can I defend her and let her stay legally? I don't know. That's what I mentioned. I don't. The whole point was, I'm telling you, listen, if you don't have to stay, I swear to God, you can have your opinion. I have mine. I still love you. You can stay if you want. If you don't want, you can leave. I'm fine with that. And I appreciate you, okay? But I got a couple more Trump jokes. I'm not joking. I actually do. I'm serious. So I got to do it. I got to do my jokes. I'm serious. So I'll let you choose. If you don't like it, that's fine. Just say, I got to go. I got to do it. It's my jokes. It's my show. I have to do it. I don't, listen,
where is this, by the way?
I don't want, no, but
This is Flappers in Burbank. So that pretty much summed up what I just said. I mean, it was like, right. I was like, listen, I can't help myself. This is my show. And part of my whole thing was, if you don't like it, go create your own blog, do your own show. This is my point of view. And as a matter of fact, I did lose. It's interesting because a lot of immigrants, like you said, became hardcore Trump supporters. Mm-hmm. So I lost a lot of like a lot of Iranians thought that Trump was going to get rid of the current government in Iran somehow. And the current government in Iran is very oppressive. They're horrible. It's a horrible government. Mm-hmm. But it was similar to everything else that Trump would say, which was there was no real plan. He was like, I'll get rid of them. So then a lot of Iranians who are conservative here were like, he's going to get rid of them. And then they did what you just said, which was there's, you know, W. Kumail Bell on his show on CNN. CNN. He was interviewing some Iranians in New York, and there's a lot of Persian Jewish people in New York. And he was asking them, he goes, you guys immigrated to America. So how are you against other immigrants coming to America? And one guy was like, well, you know, it was legal. And then W. Kumail Bell was like, well, if someone comes to the border and seeks political asylum, that's legal. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, but now it's more dangerous. There's terrorists, all this. And so it's just crazy how logic goes out the door.
Well, there's that famous quote from Jonathan Swift. I say it all the time. You can't use logic to talk someone out of a position that they didn't use logic to get to. And that's just the end of it all. That's crazy.
Yeah. So in that situation, as you saw, this lady was drunk. And I really got used to saying to people, hey, the beauty of this country is you can have your opinion. I can have my opinion. You don't have to like me. I mean, as a matter of fact, I tell other people, I go, if you're getting like people, you know, criticizing you, that's a good thing for your career because it means you've gone beyond your fan base. Now you have other people that know you.
Right.
So it's good to be there and it's good to have a voice.
Yeah, and also the old adage, if you try to please everybody, you end up pleasing nobody. So I get it. Shannon, amazingly, the hour's almost done. So we got to do the first right now.
The first time ever I saw.
The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. Maz just inspired me to have some more water, so I'm going to do that right now.
Drink. It's good for you.
So we ask you your first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll. We mean the first concert you went to, ideally something we're going to know and not some fucking weird Iranian band you saw back in the homeland.
How do you know they're weird? Maybe he saw like the Led Zeppelin.
They're probably weird.
Of Iran, goddammit.
Yeah, man. I saw Abdullah and the Thieves.
That's their Beatles. Peter Jackson's doing a 9-hour on their practices too.
Hilarious. No, I would say, gosh, what was my first concert? I know that like I was pretty easy rock guy. Like I used to listen to Phil Collins. Although I listened to Eric Clapton. I've been to Eric Clapton concert. I've been to Phil Collins. I was.
I like that you're thinking about getting more ballsy. Is Eric Clapton? It's pretty funny.
Okay. No, I'll tell you a rock concert. Santana. I saw Santana.
That's a good one.
There it is.
Black Magic Woman. I saw Santana a few times, but I saw them one time in Santa Cruz. In like a school, it was like a school gym or something. They did like a limited seating,
wow,
like
cool.
2,000 seats.
Wow.
And it was so, again, going back to like, this was like late 80s, early 90s. The place was, I think it was overpacked because the windows were closed. So as they're singing, it's just getting steamier and steamier. Like you could smell Carlos Santana's body odor, basically. Mm. But it was pretty cool, man.
I feel you could probably do that in any sized arena, anyway. But all right, now, how old are you then? I guess you're like, because you're my age, so you're probably in your teens, right?
About yeah, late son. Teens, probably late teens, definitely. Definitely
so now, the first teens. Drug you ever did after pot, unless pot was not your first drug.
Well, pot was my first drug, and then the only other drug I've actually done was ecstasy. I never did any other drug. So,
when did you do ecstasy?
Gosh, when was the first time I did ecstasy? I think the first time I tried it, it was one of those things where it didn't really take effect, because it was one of those things where the person that was with me was like, just try half, and mm-hmm. then once you feel it, then take the other. And I took the half, and I was in New York with some friends, and I was like, not feeling anything. And then nothing happened. So it was kind of a dud, you know? Uh-huh. Although after that, I tried a few other times, and it became silly, because it was all about like, I was like, oh my God, this is great. And I'm touching myself or my girlfriend then. It's just stupid. And then, by the way, one thing that really started worrying me was I remember one time doing it, and then the next day having to meet a friend somewhere, and I'm driving to meet him, and I just kept forgetting how to get there. And I was like, this is not good for my brain.
Yeah, so, I mean,
quickly stopped.
All right, now what about first time you had sex?
First time I had sex. Now this is one of those things where like I really worked at it. It was like, so I was my girlfriend in high school who, you know, I had my aunt who lived near us had an apartment, and I was like, can I get your apartment for the night? You come stay with, you know, us. And so she was like, sure. Like the women in my family knew what was going on. And so we went and saw the movie Tequila Sunrise. Do you remember that?
The movie. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mel Gibson, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think there was like some like hot sex scenes or something in there. And so I was just trying to really get her in the mood. And at the same time, I was like, I don't want to mess it up. I think I almost messed it up because I think I told some friends of mine. I was like, tonight's the night. And somehow it got back to her and she was like,
oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, she's like, are you telling everyone we're going to have sex? And I was like, I just told a couple guys. And she's like, I don't think we're going to do it. And I was like, oh, shit. So, a lot of back and forth. And finally, we were able to make it happen. And it was pretty cool, man. It was,
So in a way, you got laid thanks to Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson. Who knew he'd be an anti-Semite?
Who knew? All right, so you have the Back to School podcast. Obviously, the most recent special is The Pandemic Warrior that's on Peacock TV. You also sit on the board of the Persian American Cancer Institute and the Society for Children with Cancer. So I guess cancer, you lost your sister, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, I lost my sister to breast cancer in 2017, Maryam Jobrani, and she was and is one of the closest people to me and just a special human being. She actually made a documentary called Everything Must Change, which people can find on Amazon and elsewhere. And, you know, again, I'm biased, but it was a really good documentary. It's about her journey with cancer, and she talks about our family. And she is a bright light. And I'll tell you, it's interesting because I never take comfort in, you know, hearing other people losing people. But when you hear other people lose people, it makes you go, oh my God, we all go through it. So I was just listening to Stern interview Eddie Vedder, and he talked about losing his brother. And I was like, oh man. And I lost a brother as well. I lost my brother to addiction, and then I lost my sister to breast cancer. So, you know, it ain't easy, and you never get over it. But I try to give back whenever I can. I got a scholarship in her name at UC Berkeley, and I do an annual fundraiser for a sober living place in honor of my brother.
Wow!
And I've always been, you know, comedians, we get hit up all the time, and I've never found a charity that I was like, nah, I don't support, you know. You're helping the homeless? Screw you.
What about porn star immigrants? That might be one that you don't support.
And about, what was her name again? Nikki Benz?
Nikki Benz, yeah. Here's
erase
my
erase it from your mind. Don't my, support my, my quick that little ever proof again.
Of, my quick little proof of doing too much research. You felt closer to your sister when you went to a bamboo forest in Japan. How did I find that one out, for God's sakes?
You have a
I also
gift,
go to
holy moly.
At
I forgot about that.
At Maz Jobrani on Instagram and Twitter, and MazJobrani.com, of course, also. Is there anything else we didn't plug, or is there anything you want to do before we go around the room and
you
do
guys
plug?
Nailed it all. I'm on tour. If people want to see me on tour, if you don't – listen, I don't do any more Trump jokes because it's just like I'm trying not to even say his name anymore. But I do have – I do lean – in that direction. So if you're like some, like if you're QAnon, don't come to my show. But if you're a normal human being, come to my show. I'm
unless you
tour.
Want to go see John F. Kennedy Jr. show up and come back from the dead, then go to your show.
He's now opening for me. JFK Jr. opens for me.
He has a hot 20 from what I hear. That's the word on the street.
He flies in on a plane. He actually crashes the plane into the stage and then he does the show.
James, your plugs.
Yo, the James Madden on Instagram. Check out my new album. It debuted at number one. Keep buying it. Keep supporting it. The Check Spot, me, while everyone pays their bills, doing a question and answer at the worst part of the comedy show. And in January, my new podcast launches with Shuli, formerly of The Stern Show. Thanks for coming out. A podcast about bombing. We interview comics about bombing and their early shitty jokes. It is dope.
Wow, those are high notes to go out on. Shannon, your plugs.
Follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have people from all walks of life, comedians, musicians, porn stars, reality TV stars, etc. come on, and they tell their own personal stories about their worst date experience, a street fight they've been in, and an experience with the paranormal.
All right. Now, by the way, before we go any further, we always try and figure out, does our guest, do not give any indication, does our guest believe or not believe in ghosts? Do not react. It's a hard one for me. Because of his background, I'm going to go with yes. Not because of his demeanor, but because of his background. Don't say anything yet. Don't say anything yet. James. No. Shannon.
I'm also split here because of all of the research that he does for his podcast and for explaining things to his children. It makes me feel like he's going to err on the side of like tangible evidence of things.
All right, let's see. Maz, I kept saying Maz. Maz.
Split down the middle.
Let's hear Maz. What do you think?
Well, you know, Shannon's breakdown was pretty spot on. So not ghosts, but I do believe in some sort of spirit or some sort of, you know, higher energy. So I've had
things happen. I give that a yes.
Yeah, I've had things happen that I couldn't explain. So I don't feel like, you know, Casper, someone's walking around with like a white, you know, Casper, but right. I do feel like there's an energy out there. I'll give you a quick, before, I know ahead, I don't, sure. It's running long, but I'll give you a quick little thing. I make notes of things that happen that are weird. Like, you know, you might be thinking something and then it just happens.
Mm-hmm. This is what my show is about. This is exactly what my show is about.
So check this out, Shannon. So my daughter, when she was maybe five or so, she'd be sleeping in her room and once in a while she'd come over, you know, I'm having trouble sleeping, that's fine, go back to bed. So I had run into this guy who I'd met a while back. He was a director, filmmaker, etc. Hey, what are you working on these days? Oh, I got a show on Netflix. It's called OA. I don't know if you guys remember OA.
I love that show.
Right? Original. Nobody knew what OA stood for, but they thought maybe it was Original Angel. Anyway, the show itself was this girl comes into this town. Nobody knows who she is. It's kind of, you know, mystic and you know, extraterrestrial.
I forget that girl's name, by the way, but she's also done Another Earth and The Sound of My Voice. She's incredible, that girl. But
she's great.
I forgot her name, but she's great.
So the whole episode, she's in this town as a girl in her 20s, whatever it is, and she's got these other young kids that they start thinking, oh, something special about her. So as this is happening, the show is – this is the pilot episode. It's coming towards the end of the pilot episode. My daughter walks into our room and she goes, Daddy, I got a bloody nose. And I go, oh, maybe it's like the – maybe it's dry air or something. Let me take care of you, baby. So I like, you know, help her with her bloody nose. And I go, why don't you go sleep in the other room and I'll come check on you. Okay, Daddy, good night. She goes to bed. I hit pause for a minute while I dealt with my daughter, hit play on the show. I kid you not. The whole episode has been this girl in her, whatever it is, you know, she's an adult mm-hmm. at this point. Now she's gathered with these young people in some like abandoned building and they go, so who are you? And she goes, let me tell you who I am. And then she goes, back in 1908 in Russia, I was a child. So she goes back to her previous life. She's a child. She goes, my father was this man who was this, you know, successful man and this and that. Shows her father's this powerful man and they're hanging out together, this and that. And then she goes, one day my father was having dinner, shows the dad's having dinner. And she goes, and I walked into the room. She walks into the room as like a six-year-old girl with a bloody nose.
Wow.
Wow.
Blood, and I'm like, what the? I go, what the fuck? I go, that just happened. That just happened to me. And she tells her whole story. And I was like, that's one of those, I can't explain.
Right.
My daughter is not like prone to nosebleeds. I'm just sitting there going like, what the fuck just happened?
That's cool. I like that.
So when that kind of stuff happens to me, I don't necessarily think there's ghosts. I just think there's like there's a message in the universe that I'm kind of living like my truth or whatever it is. Right. You know,
Shannon, you were about to say something.
Yeah, that type of thing, the way that we like to view that on my show at least, is that is like a synchronicity, which on the yes. show, we, things that relate to the shows, we call them the thing incidences. But synchronicities, I feel as if they are a sign from the universe or from whatever that you're on the right path. Like when these little coincidences start happening, it's like a note that it's like this is good. You're doing the right thing.
Yeah, like I just the other day was really horny, and lo and behold, there was a porn movie on my television. It worked out amazingly. It was so perfect.
Just like,
and it was Patricia Benz or whatever.
And Nikki Benz.
It was someone pro immigrant. Who was pro immigrant.
Follow me everywhere. At I Am Ralph Sutton, my other podcast, which is called The Good Sugar Podcast on Health and Wellness, comes out with me and the founder of Juice Press every single Monday, where we try and follow my career, or not my career, my journey towards getting into a better shape. As I said, I've lost about almost 70 pounds already, and that comes out every single Monday. Thank you so much, dude. We add a song every week to the playlist. We're going to add Black Magic Woman, Just Because, from Santana. And dude, honestly, thank you. It was a pleasure having you.
You've been listening to the SDR Show.